if you like betting on golf. But everyone that you back misses the cut. Get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system. The golf betting system is the golf betting system podcast.
Greetings, welcome to the Golf Betting System podcast. It's episode 268. This is our Genesis Scottish Open plus Barbasol Championship bets pod. Barry O'Hanrahan and Paul Williams join me, Steve Bamford, to discuss our selection for this week's PGA DP World Tour action. Good morning. How are we?
Morning, chaps.
Morning, guys.
Please subscribe to this podcast as you drive the popularity of the show. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. Please be gamble aware. You can visit begambleaware.org for more information. And of course, please bet responsibly. Visit our world-famous golf betting system website, where we have in-depth betting previews for both events, strokes gained analysis for both events, strokes gained rankings, effectively, course form statistics combined with current form stats, and of course, then we have our brand spanking new predictor models, all available for the golf this week. They're all completely free of charge as well. On Twitter, Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. I am at Bamford Golf. Subscribe to the Steve Bamford Golf YouTube channel, where this podcast is available along with my weekly golf betting show. Now, you guys, as listeners, power this podcast, so we need your 5-star reviews on Apple Podcasts as ever. For those of you who leave a review, I will read them out at the start of each show. Leave your name and where you are in the review. These reviews are absolutely essential for the podcast. If we don't get 5-star reviews, our listenership effectively goes down. So please keep sending them in. And of course, keep pressing that 5-star button on Spotify. We had a nice jump last week. Right. You're going to like this one, chaps. This one is entitled Excellent Podcast! 5 stars. Greetings from the Netherlands. I have been listening to the podcast for a number of years and really enjoy the in-depth research that goes into each and every episode. Keep them coming, chaps. And that's from Lucas. And Lucas is in the Netherlands. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Lucas. I thought you might have been able to brush up your Dutch accent a little bit though there, Steve.
Greetings.
I would never have guessed if I had 10 guesses what country Lucas was from by Steve's.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Lucas.
Oh, dear. Thanks, Lucas.
That's the way he's actually written it as well. I'm not one for spelling and pronunciation, and we know we've got some listeners that are real sticklers, but he's actually spelled greetings, G-R-E-A-T-I-N-G-S. So there you go. Lucas, we appreciate the effort that you put in.
Very much so.
Well, let's talk about last week. Wow. I put up Robert McIntyre in the Maiden Himmerland. And I put up Schenk and McCarthy on the John Deere Classic.
And Glover.
And none of them won. It was... Let's start with the Maiden Himmerland. McIntyre throwing in that triple bogey when he was 3 clear. Mm. And then you had Richie Ramsey doubling, was it the last?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a tough hole.
This Scottish talent was just melting in the sun, wasn't it? It was disappearing. Yeah. Crunch time.
The 18th was a tough hole in that course, so... You know, it asked a lot of questions. And, you know, Nacho Oliveira as well. He only needed to make par up the last. Smashed it down the fairway. Fist pump for the drive into the fairway, and then ran through the back and made bogey to take it to a playoff. But I think when you watch the DP World Tour on a Sunday, it's it's more the same every week, isn't it? It is that proverbial hot potato. And Rasmus had posted his total. I was told, I didn't see this live in terms of the odds, but I was told that standing on the 18th tee, Rasmus was 250-1 to win, because he was out so much earlier than the other guys. An awful lot needed to happen for him to actually stand a chance of winning. And he went and made birdie on that toughest of final holes, posted 13 under, and everyone else just came back to him. It was like a procession of failures, wasn't it? And the playoff itself, if Nacho Oliveira had played the final hole in regulation like he did the first five playoff holes, then he'd have won the tournament, but couldn't do it. And then eventually Rasmus ground him down and forced the mistake out of him at the sixth time of asking, I think it was. But yeah, for me, there was a bit of a brief excitement on Saturday because Søren Kjeldsen, who I'd backed at 250s, he was 7-under through 16 holes. At that point, he was sitting in third or fourth on the leaderboard. I'm thinking, you know, there's a good chance here. Finish this round off, Søren. There's a good chance that you can get yourself into a place. And that's, a full place for a 250-1 shot is, you know, the equivalent of a win, isn't it?
Yeah.
And he makes bogey double, final two holes, and that's it.
Bogey double. The GBSY.
Oh, dear. And then you just throw something at the telly or the phone.
So, question about you, Paul.
I mean, we monitor player statistics. I didn't see anything from Rasmus Højgaard that suggested he was going to turn up at his home event and win the Maiden Himmerland. But is that just Rasmus?
No, well,
is he one of these that literally just sparks from nowhere?
I forget whether we talked about it on the pod. I certainly wrote it briefly in my preview last week. He'd withdrawn from his previous two events with a rib injury, and wow, he wasn't 100%. He wasn't even 100% for this, and it's only because he was playing at home and wanting to compete that he gave it a go. And we've seen before, haven't we, numerous times where an injured golfer who has less expectation is freed up to go and produce the performance or the winning round, which as it was, that gets you over the line. It's
strokes gained emotional. It's strokes gained emotional state. He's playing his home event. He's just like, oh, I'm a bit injured. So what? Everybody's always a little bit injured with something. Mm. Boom. So, question: does he make your Ryder Cup team?
It is a tough one because him and Nikolai are both got immense talent, and I'm sure they will feature in multiple Ryder Cups over the years. Whether it's this one or not, I'm not sure. I think if he'd have finished Nacho Oliveira off very quickly in the playoff, shown that killer instinct, then potentially, but it dragged on and on and on.
So you're saying the way he won is going to be the deciding factor? That's brutal. No,
I think it shows a level of kind of killer instinct. You know, if you remember Matt Wallace going back a few years ago when he was trying to qualify for the...
We never let this one go, do we? Matt Wallace not making the Ryder Cup team.
No, but the manner in which he won that event, he came through, he made birdie after birdie after birdie, got himself into a playoff and then birdied every playoff hole. And he was just knocking it stiff, you know, knocking it to 3, 5, 7 feet each time. You know, there was that aggressive, there was that, killer instinct there. Yeah, he didn't make the team. Yeah, that's water under the bridge. But, I get what you're saying. You can't discard him just for lack of, not killing one tournament off in a few holes. But, he and his brother will make the team multiple times, I'm sure. But whether it's this time or not, I'm on the fence.
I just think it's interesting. Himself, his brother, and Ludvig Åberg. Like, that's in the future. They, all things going on the trajectory we think we can see for them, they're going to be Ryder Cuppers for maybe multiple Ryder Cuppers. And so, yeah, it feels. I mean, we're going to be going up against a very strong US team. It kind of feels like a little bit of a free hit to get one or two of the new generation blooded, and in Europe as well, which means they'll be a bit more or at least they'll have the experience of it when they go to the US the next time, because there's a really good chance one or two of them will be on the team in the next one in the USA.
Yeah.
So anyway, that's just my thoughts right now. I'm sure we're going to have many, many more pods of Ryder Cup chat now over the coming weeks. Mm. It's coming up pretty fast.
Well, it is.
At the moment. Sorry. You go ahead.
Yeah, I'll just say it is coming up fast. And if you look at the move that Sepp Straka made last week, he's now sitting in a very strong position going into this kind of critical part of the season.
If you're winning a PGA Tour event, even though it's one of the weakest, not that that matters overly, but you've got to think you're going to get a pick, surely. I mean, Yannick Paul is the one that's clinging on to that last European points automatic spot. And then below him, you've got Moronk. And you've got Rasmus now.
Yep.
Victor Perez looks like he's horribly out of form. And we've seen that from Perez before when it comes to qualification. But it's interesting how these underlings are bubbling now, aren't they? Rasmus wins. Sepp Straka wins. Seamus Power played nicely last week. Mm-hmm. Alex Noren got a top 10 the other week from absolutely nothing. You know, they know it's coming. Aaron Rye's playing some really nice golf at the moment.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're coming.
Well, you go back to Wallace. Wallace won, was it the Corrales, didn't he, over in the PGA Tour early in the year. And yeah, his form's dropped off since, but if he puts a run together, you know, if you're talking about having won a PGA Tour event as being one of the potential indicators, then
yeah,
there's lots of names.
And clearly, we've got a year where Sergio Garcia and Lee Westwood and Ian Poulter will not be playing in a European Ryder Cup team. So if you're going to put new blood in, like Erasmus Højgaard, like a Ludvig Åberg, the guy's driving is just unbelievable. It's proper John Rahm-like. This could be the year to do it. Or would you put someone in like Robert McIntyre, who melts when he's got a 3-shot lead at the Made in Himalayan?
That's an interesting... When you think about say Højgaard doesn't get in because of the way he won, I mean, then McIntyre definitely doesn't get in because of how he melted on the Sunday. So
I don't think we discuss things like this on the pod for that reason in terms of Ryder Cup, although we do. But the main reason we discuss it is because, and Paul's noted this over a period of time on this podcast, you are getting Robert McIntyre. The only reason I really backed him last week, because he was at 25-1, which is a bloody good price for Robert McIntyre on the DP World Tour. He's normally 14 or 16-1. And as Paul has pointed out, when you're backing 14 and 16-1 chances, it's nice that they actually convert some of their contending performances, at least, you know, a number of times that would make you a profit. But McIntyre, he's not exactly stellar, is he, when he's at the top of the leaderboard when it comes to converting for a victory.
No, and you know, he has won. You know, he won in Italy, didn't he, last year? He won Cyprus. But compared to the number of chances that he's had, number of really good chances that he's had, it's disappointing.
Exactly. It is, when you're backing him at that price. Mm. DP World Tour Race to Dubai rankings. Don't forget, if you're in the top 10 and non-exempt on the PGA Tour, you are playing PGA Tour golf in 2024. Alexander Bjork has jumped 4 places to number 7. Pablo Larrazabal down 1 to 9. Joost Luiten at 10. Teodor Bjørn Olsen has slipped out of the top 10 at 11. Rasmus Højgaard jumps 55 spots to number 12. You've then got Yannick Paul, Marcel Siem, and rounding off the top 15, Jorge Campillo. Just worthy to keep your eye, because that, again, is going to bubble and bubble and bubble. Mm. So, you know, you've got guys there going for a potential Ryder Cup spot and a PGA Tour card. So it's going to be fascinating to watch. Over in the United States, we had the John Deere Classic. Sepp Straka took that one out. That's his second PGA Tour victory. Well done if you're on it, 50-1. I said to Paul, I had a choice, really. Sepp Strucker was on my original list of players to put in, and for some reason I went for Eric Cole instead. I think it was because he was 50-1, and I was going down this narrative of 28-1 sub, and then 66s to 80s. So Strucker's blown that at 50-1. It was always going to go at some point. I thought to myself, you know, you don't tend to see someone that far back coming through and winning a PGA Tour event. It was very, very impressive. And then I just looked before we came on air. You know, sitting four back at the John Deere Classic actually isn't a bad situation to be in, because Zach Johnson was four back when he won in 2012. Jordan Spieth was six back in 2013 when he won his first PGA Tour event. Bryson DeChambeau was four back in 2017. And Lucas Glover, as recently as 2021, was four back, then took out the title with a very low round on Sunday. And it's exactly what Sepp Strucker did. His numbers were absolute madness. I mean, I keep a track of all this. It was absolutely crazy what he did. He opened with a 73. I think he was something like 94th going into Friday. If you then look at his last 54 holes, you listen to this, chaps. Sepp Strucker, 190 shots. Next best, the amateur, Teal Bjornsson, 197. Seven clear of second place in terms of 54-hole performance at the end of that tournament. Mm. That's a number I can't actually recall seeing anything like that.
So 63.3 average? Next up.
Pardon?
That's a 63.3 average over his last three rounds.
Crazy, mate. Yeah. He shot 63, 65, 62, and he doubled the last when he was going for a 59.
Mm. Insane.
And then you had the usual. I mean, it was very DP World Tour-esque, wasn't it? You're basically saying to players like Alex Smalley, Brendan Todd, Adam Schenck, Denny McCarthy, perennial non-winners or youngsters that are still learning their way on the PGA Tour, come and get me, chat. And no one made any kind of input into, you know, any inroads into that lead, did they? To be fair to Strucker, he just literally dominated Sunday.
Blew them away.
The one I was going to point out was Cam Young. 2-1 favourite to win that after 36 holes. Ryder Cupper, potentially, for Team USA. Couldn't take out the John Deere Classic. And yeah, same with Denny McCarthy, isn't it? If you're looking for Ryder Cuppers there, you've got two. I mean, personally, you've got, clearly with Cam Young, you've got a guy that's finished second in majors, but it's so difficult to win on the PGA Tour. It's amazing. Mm. If you show any signs of fragility mentally on a Sunday, someone's going to come and get you. Yeah. Crazy. So Cam Young still winless on the PGA Tour, as is Denny McCarthy. Yep. But anyway, what could I do? I got Adam Schenck in the each way places, full each way at 30-1. I got Lucas Glover and Denny McCarthy par each way, so I can't complain too much about last
week. That's a good week.
It would have been nice to go two wins on the trot, though. Mm. I was more disappointed with Robert McIntyre, to be honest, especially when he was three clear with about five to play.
Yeah, not good.
Not good. Should we talk this week's golf? The Genesis Scottish Open. I'll open. In terms of best bookmaker for the 2023 Scottish Open, we're highlighting Bet365, who has ever have their each way extra market available, which gives you the option to increase or decrease the number of places when you are betting pre-event on the Scottish outright market. Right now, as we record the pod, they're offering market best odds and extended eight places each way on the market leaders, such as Scotty Scheffler 7-1, Rory McIlroy 8-1. We've got Cantlay and Xander at 14-1, Hovland 18-1, Fitzpatrick, Fleetwood, Hatton and Spieth. There's a group of four for you. 22-1. So those guys in the UK are market best price, and you're getting eight places each way with their each way extra facility. Right, we recommend Bet365. If you're 18 plus and do not have a Bet365 sports account, you can find details of their current Bet £10, get £30 in free bets, new customer promotion. Plus a link through to that very offer with T's and C's in this podcast description. Don't forget to use the bonus code Paul.
Sport30, SPORT30.
When registering. Seamless. Right. Genesis Scottish Open. Now, we were talking about this off mic. If you're looking at the four majors this year, we had the Valero Texas Open. We had the AT&T Byron Nelson. We also had the RBC Canadian Open, were the curtain raisers for the following week's major. This Genesis Scottish Open field, which is a co-sanctioned event, DP World Tour and PGA Tour, is by far and away the most loaded pre-major tournament we've seen in 2023. It's a cracking field. So over to you, Paul. You tried to pick out the winner this week.
Yeah, it is, as you say, it's absolutely loaded. Eight of the world's top 10 are here. So John Rahm and Cam Smith are the two that are missing. 30 of the world's top 50. So in comparison to the other warm-up events, the events prior to the majors, it is a strong one, isn't it? Not just the fact it's, you know, as you said, it's co-sanctioned, you know, roughly half from the PGA Tour, roughly half from the DP World Tour, and a few invites and KPGA players. But other than the fact that it's, you know, a massive event in that respect, in terms of the prize fund, $9 million, 8,000 Race to Dubai points and 5,000 Ryder Cup points. So for the guys that play or apply their trade over on the DP World Tour, it's massive. You know, doing well in this event could, you know, set up the season, set up a career almost. So, you know, it's an important week for, you know, all the players here for, you know, a multitude of different reasons, really. You're taking us through the market. I mean, generally, as you said, Bet365 have got both the best prices and you know, a good combination of odds or terms options there as well. You've also got Ladbrokes this week going 10 places each way, a fifth of the odds, and Coral have gone 12 places, a sixth of the odds this week as well. So if you're having a look around for different betting options this week, then it is one of those weeks where you should be shopping around. In terms of the markets, it's not dissimilar to a major championship in terms of the options that are out there. So do take some time to compare your prices before placing your bets would be my advice this week. The venue, Renaissance Club, it's the fifth year running, actually, that we've been at the Renaissance. So there's loads of data to study on the stats pages this week. As Steve said, there's the strokes gained data for the last few years as well this week, which is positive. And, of course, we've got history for the Scottish Open going further back historically as well on the previous different venues for this event. But the last 4 years are the ones you want to look at specifically for Renaissance Club statistics. Now, the course itself, it sits on that stretch of land that's known as the Gulf Coast up in Scotland. It sits between Muirfield and Archerfield links specifically, and it's a modern links, constructed and opened in 2008. So for the purists, you know, it's going to be links like rather than a pure true links. But it does look like a links, it feels like a links. It's got typical linksy features: deep bunkers, gorse, thick fescue rough, fescue greens. In terms of fescue greens, think the likes of Royal Birkdale, which hosted the Open back in 2017. Castle Stewart as well, which was one of the previous events for this, also featured fescue greens as well. Tend to be reasonably slow. So there's always a bit of adjustment for the guys playing the PGA Tour when they come over and play these greens, because the speeds tend to be significantly different to what they're more used to. In terms of the metric, 7,237 yard par 70. It used to be a 71. They've changed it down to a 70. Three par fives, five par threes. So not overly long. Can lend itself to strong scoring when the conditions are right. But that all depends on the weather. And looking at the weather forecast, a bit mixed this week. Coming into it, there's been a lot of sunshine and showers, so it's not going to be bone dry up there, that's for sure. In the week itself, or the 4 days itself for the actual event, we're looking at temperatures around 17 centigrade, which is, 63 Fahrenheit. Winds in the 10 to 15 mile an hour bracket for Thursday, Friday. Sunshine and showers. Now, there is a suggestion that low pressure system that's developing over in the west of Scotland, that may well scoot across the country over the weekend. And that potentially could bring in stronger winds for Saturday and particularly Sunday. 20, maybe 25, maybe 30 mile an hour gusts on Sunday. So it could make it pretty fruity over the weekend, which would be a good preparation, I think, for the Open Championship next week. This course has had some criticism in the past that it's been too easy, and they've tried to pinch the fairways in a bit, and it does rely on the conditions. So hopefully there'll be some, a reasonable test out there for the players this week. In terms of the winners we've had here at Renaissance, 2019, the first year we played was Bernd Wiesberger at 40-1. Aaron Rye won in 2020, that was 50-1. Minwoo Lee won the following year, 200-1. And then Xander Schauffele came over and won at 20-1 last year. But then if you look at the winning scores, and we talk so often about these exposed or linksy or coastal tracks requiring, or, only playing as tough as the conditions allow. Wiesberger, when he won, 22 under par. Now, Wiesberger made 30 birdies that week, which for Bernd Wiesberger is an awful lot of birdies. 22 under for Wiesberger. Aaron Rye won in a colder, windier, tougher renewal at 11 under par. Minwoo Lee was 18 under. And then last year, it was windy and it was also a bit firmer last year. Xander Schauffele won at 7 under par. And yeah, it certainly did play tougher last year. I think this year it's likely to be a little bit softer. But then if it is windy over the weekend, that could well make it tougher. So I don't know, if I was to pin a number on it, I think you might be looking at 12, 14, something like that. I think the scoring will be reasonably good for the first couple of days, even with a little bit of breeze, because it'll be relatively soft. And then if that wind does arrive over the weekend, then it could be a case of hanging on for the remaining two rounds, which would be good to see, I think. Now, digging through the data that we've got, digging through the statistics, the most consistent statistic that you can grab from the four winners, and if you're starting with just one stat as kind of the cornerstone of your analysis this week, then for me, it'd be strokes gained tee to green. Bernd Wiesberger was third for strokes gained tee to green when he won. Aaron Rye was second. Minwoo was fourth. And Xander led the field last year for strokes gained tee to green. So all four of the winners excelled on that particular statistic. Another thing to pick out, and this is something that Steve mentioned to us off mic, actually, and it's a very valid point. All four of the winners here arrived off at least a top 20 finish on their previous start. In fact, if you look at Rye, you look at Wiesberger, both of them had finished runner-up on the previous start. That was both times that was in Ireland, when they used to play the Irish Open, Scottish Open, then Open Championship sequence back in the day. So Rye and Wiesberger had both finished runner-up in Ireland. Xander had won the Travellers Championship on his previous start. That was a week out. So he won the Travellers, had a week off, and then won here 12 months ago. Minwoo Lee had finished 17th on his previous start. So top 20 on a previous start has been the trend for the last four winners, and all four winners here at Renaissance. Bernd Wiesberger was making his debut. Of course, that was the first year it was played. Aaron Rye was making his debut the following year. But Minwoo had finished 30th here previously, and Xander had finished 10th on his one start here at Renaissance. So potentially a previous effort round here. Maybe not critical, but I don't think it'd go amiss, really. Potentially one of those weeks where you can dig into a bit of current form, you can dig into a little bit of course form, overlay it with a bit of strokes gained tee to green, and hopefully it spits out the right answer. If only golf betting was as easy as that, eh? I'm back six this week. two shorties, two kind of mid-range, slightly longer plays, and then two longer plays. So I think what I'll do, I'll take us through those in blocks of two, the two short, two middle, two long, and I'll bring you guys in after I've taken us through mine each time to keep this podcast relatively fluid, eh?
Okay.
Top of the market then. You've kind of in your intro, Steve, you said, you know, trying to unpick this is a bit of a task. And I think you've got to give massive respect to the guys at the top of the market. Scheffler, McIlroy, Cantlay, you know, these guys are at the top of the betting for a reason. And, you know, if Scheffler turns up with the putter, you know, the putter working, then, you know, the rest of the field need to watch out. I think for me, the likes of Scheffler and McIlroy, the big prize for those guys is next week. Whether they choose to turn it on, whether they choose to give everything the week before, you know, I can't see it personally. I think for me, and this is kind of borne out by the winners here as well, I think for me, the winner is likely to come from just a little bit further down the field. Personally, the first one I came to was Ricky Fowler. And I know we've talked at length about Ricky. We talked at length about Ricky last week on the pod, further to his win in Detroit the previous week. But I think if there's a player that's going to have the motivation and the momentum to win this week, then Fowler's the most likely candidate, in my view. He won the Scottish Open at Gullam back in 2015. And so he's proven that he's happy to go and win an event immediately prior to the Open Championship. He's got three more top tens in Scotland at the Scottish Open over the years, one at the Royal Aberdeen, another at Dundonald Links, another again at Gullam as well. So he's very comfortable in these parts and in this kind of terrain as well. He was eighth going into the weekend here last year and drifted over the weekend. But his game is, how would you describe it? It's in an infinitely better position now, I think, than it was 12 months ago. 10 top 20s rather in his last 11 starts. He won in Detroit last time out, as we said. And if you look at the likes of Tony Finau last year, once he got that breakthrough win, once he got that win that he'd been, you know, striving to get back on, you know, to get himself back in the saddle, after a long hiatus, then we saw Finau go back to back last year. We saw Xander, and again, Xander's a similar kind of case because he'd been winning tournaments, but they were, you know, these, you know, the Olympics or the, you know, these kind of events or the pairs events. You know, he went out and eventually won a bona fide PGA Tour event at the Travelers. Week off, came here, won this event as well. So players that you know have regained that winning feeling coming into this event could well be the key. Perhaps with the weight lifted off his shoulders now, he's got that win. Floodgates may open. Sitting 12th now in the Ryder Cup standings, so he's still got work to do. I'm sure he'll be a very popular pick. And you know, if he's in and around the top 12, I suspect he gets a pick anyway. You know, Ricky's in the kind of form now where I think he can go ahead and absolutely bolster that position. So happy to take Ricky. I took him 16-1, eight places each way, 3 points each way, which is a relatively big bet for me for the top of the market. But I really do fancy Ricky goes well this week. The other one in a similar kind of bracket who I've backed is Tyrrell Hatton. Now, I was tempted by Jordan Spieth. The question mark for me is whether his wrist is you know, good enough for him to really truly contend and play this week. We shall see. He did play the US Open without any strapping on his wrist, which was positive from his perspective, although he missed the cut. I'm denied about Spieth, but I've let him go. I'll be interested to see how he's playing, you know, potentially one to pick up in play if it's clear that he's playing, if he's playing well, as we get into the actual event itself. We shall see. Tommy Fleetwood as well, got a great record here, but for me, just, you know, almost like that Robert McIntyre, just doesn't win enough for the price that you tend to get on him. So I went through the market. Tyrrell Hatton was the one that really stuck out below Fowler. Six DP World Tour wins now. One of them was a flagship event at Wentworth. Three of them Rolex Series level wins like this event this week. The other two were Dunhill Links wins, so all highly relevant in one way or another to this week's task. If you look at his form prior to the majors this year as well, fifth at the Byron Nelson before the US PGA, third at the Canadian Open before the US Open. So he's been warming up nicely. His pre-major preparation has been absolutely solid. And even if his major performances themselves have been a little bit underwhelming, would be fair to say. Typically from a poor start that he's had at the majors when he's contended or when he's gone out there the last couple of times. Three attempts here at Renaissance, 14th, 18th, 24th. He shot rounds of 64, 65, 66 during that time. Nothing to suggest that he doesn't get on with the course. I think he'll go well this week, Tyrrell Hatton at 22-1. Now, my next one is 70-1. So, Barry, have you got any that are in that kind of sub 50 bracket this week?
I don't actively like to root against you, Paul, but I really hope Ricky finishes somewhere in the tied at 17th this week. Just keeps it bubbling. I've kind of gone back to my vibe that I had, or just like on picking golfers the year Francesco Molinari won in Carnoustie. Was it 2019? Sorry if my date picking is awful, but just remember picking him based on who's playing the best golf right now. Yeah. And it feels like I can apply that kind of formula to this stretch of golf between the Scottish Open and the Open Championship. I suppose like a magnet, I'm drawn to the Open Championship, and I'm hoping Ricky doesn't do anything too crazy this week, because I really fancy him for next week, because he's sixth in the world on the data golf rankings. He is one of the hottest players on the planet right now. And kind of hoping that same formula applies for him next week. So that's my bad wishes for you this week. Or not too bad. Maybe a place would be fine. I'll give me a place.
Tied seventh.
Yeah, exactly. I'm a bit lost this week. I kind of seen a little bit of life out of Max Homa, but I'm not sure if he's fully activated yet. But his odds are nice for somebody as who's won as many times as he is and as talented as he is. I'm a little bit caught between patterns right now. Steve, yeah. Help. Save me, please. I'm going to keep it simple.
I'm going to go for a guy that finished fourth last time out at the Travelers and finished fourth here last year. Hasn't won so far in 2023. He's vanilla. He's Patrick Cantlay. 14-1. Great, Nick. Needs a win. Won't be too fussed about the Open next year. I mean, with the way that he plays majors, I could see Cantlay taking this one out, and then he'd join his mate Xander Schauffele. So Xander in 2022 and Patrick in 2023.
I just struggle to get excited about him, but that's just me.
But yeah, I get that. The one that also jumps out to me, I mean, you listen to this set of results. Justin Rose, he's playing some really good stuff at the moment. His last two victories in the United States have been at Torrey Pines and Pebble Beach. So it's not as if this guy can't win decent events by the coast. He also won the Scottish Open way back in 2014. So we've even got it franked that he doesn't mind winning the Scottish Open the week before the Open Championship. He's finished ninth at whatever tournament I watched recently, Justin Rose in the last few groups on a Sunday. Ninth at the PGA, 12th at the Charles Schwab, 8th at the Canadian Open, 4th at the British Masters. There was a miscut at the US Open when pretty much everyone and their wife were on him.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's worse bets than Justin Rose, to be honest. I mean, I'm seeing him 45-1 with Unibet. If you're going to be safe with him, he's 8 places each way available with either Bet365 each way extra or William Hill. I think there's worse bets than Rose.
Yeah. what? He's been solid stuff.
He has.
If we're looking at this top 17 last outing, current form in, you know, Rose, I mean, I personally, I'd put, you know, Shane Lowry's getting backed off the board. Maybe. I mean, yeah, okay, he plays well by the coast. I don't know. He's, for me, he's playing far better golf than a lot of the people that are shorter in price. So, yeah, I don't mind Rose.
Just another one who's been playing quite well recently is Minwoo Lee. He had his, you know, last year he was defending, but, and that's not always easy. You know, one of the first times he's probably dealt with that on a high level. So, you know, 5th, 9th and 15th in a three-week stretch, has a week off coming into this. Be a bit fresh. Good vibes coming back here. 33-1 it was. I guess probably not. Probably a little bit short here. 33, 35s. Like, I'd rather take Minwoo at that price versus, let's say, Tommy Fleetwood at 20s, 22s.
Yeah. No, I get that. I get that. There's probably a little bit more win equity in there as well. The thing with Shane as well, going back to Shane, is it's his course debut. And there's kind of this assumption that he's going to play well on every coastal linksy type course or when the conditions are poor. But, you know, if you listen to him, he doesn't particularly like playing in tough conditions. You know, there's a leap of faith that he's going to come and perform well on debut. And with the likes of Minwoo Lee, he's course proven, isn't he? So, yeah, can see your logic there. Well, kind of in the mid-range then, Lucas Herbert I've backed at 70-1. And if that weekend wind does arrive, then Lucas is the kind of person that I'd want on the team. Three times he's won on the DP World Tour now. The most recently was in Japan back in April. The one that really caught my eye was over on the PGA Tour. That was the Butterfield Bermuda Championship in 2021. And that final day when he won there, shot a 69 the final day. Tough, tough conditions, wind, rain. Held it all together there to win that, what was his maiden PGA Tour title. Great form in the UK and Ireland over the years. Fourth twice here at Renaissance from his attempts on this particular course. Went off the boil after his win in Japan and then started to show a little bit of form last time out. 15th at the Travellers. That was a decent level as well. And he comes over here to a course that, as I say, he has contended on a couple of times and potentially with the conditions that are going to alienate a fair chunk of this field as well. So 70-1 I took. There's still a little bit of 70-1 out there. He is being backed quite heavily for many of the reasons, I guess, that I've just articulated there. So if you fancy Lucas Herbert, then that's one to get on sooner rather than later. The other one I've backed, slightly longer, Alex Noren. Got him yesterday 125-1. Again, he's been popular 100-1 right now. But a three-figure price on Alex Noren is well worth taking, I think. 12th at the Scandinavian Mixed. 9th at the Rocket Mortgage. Been putting nicely as well. And if you look at his UK form, his wider UK form, really, really strong. He won the British Masters at the Grove back in 2016. He won at Wentworth the following year. I was on him that year in 2017 when he won at Wentworth. 9th at Royal Livam in the Open Championship way back when. 6th at Royal Birkdale as well in another Open Championship. He won the Scottish Open at Castle Stewart in 2016 as well. So again, we're talking pre-major championship weeks. We're talking fescue greens. We're talking linksy golf. Couple of top threes at the Dunhill Links. He was losing finalist at the Paul Laurie match play back in 2016. And that was played at Archerfield Links, which is literally next door to this week. So some local form, some relevant form as well. And historically, Alex Noren is one of those players that you would always follow on his warm-up event prior to a major championship because he always seemed to lift his game. He got a lot of his wins early in his career in his start prior to a major championship. So Alex Noren, 125, as I say, 100-1 now. The other one I've got that kind of range. So my last two are 200-1 and 300-1. So any others in that kind of, I don't know, 66 to 100, 125-1 bracket? Barry, anything from you?
No, I'm going to go for a couple of Hail Marys from the outside. Yeah.
Couple of bombs. Anything from you in that bracket, Steve?
I'm going to keep back in this Ludwig Åberg. I don't think you're going to be getting 50 to 1 about Ludwig Åberg in many tournaments in the future. I think this guy is pretty special.
Yep.
And on a golf course, I was listening to Rick Gaiman today on his great YouTube show that he does every Monday. And he said, when you look at the Renaissance, this follows perfectly with Lucas Herbert, it rewards length off the tee. I think he said it was in the top eight on the PGA Tour for driving distance. And it also responds to around the green game. Because if you know, when the wind's blowing here and greens in regulation is low, you've got to be scrambling. You've got to be making pars to hang around on the leaderboard. So that could tie in with some of the dodgy weather we've got potentially here. Åberg, great around the green from the four outings we've seen. And also, I mean, his driving's just phenomenal. And also, I don't think it's not going to be a bad look for Ludwig to come back clearly to Europe because, you know, growing up in Sweden, he'll be used to this kind of agronomy, undoubtedly.
Yep.
So, yeah, I think 50 to 1 about him is not a bad price. And the punt of the week, and I suppose as a podcast, we might as well get on it. I actually had a little dabble at this particular individual last night. I managed to get 75 to 1. But he's been backed off the boards. Alex Smalley.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, this guy is team no putt. Cannot putt for toffee. And that's why I didn't put him up at the John Deere Classic. And he still finished second. And I think he was basically 0.3 for strokes gained putting. But his tee to green game, when he's on it, is absolutely elite. If he keeps that going this week, you could see him being a serious factor. And I believe he finished, where was he? Was he fourth last year here or top 10?
Tenth he was, yeah.
Tenth here last year on debut, yeah. His form arriving is 9th, 47th, second last week at the John Deere Classic. So that 9th was at the designated travellers as well. So it's not as if he can't mix it in good company. So I took 75 to 1, bet 365, 8 places each way last night. Still out there floating around. He started. I mean, the way this guy's been backed in is unbelievable. On first show yesterday, he was 150 to 1 with bet 365.
Yeah.
Been smashed.
Yeah, I saw a few people put him up very early on yesterday at 150 to 1. And as you say, it's going to be 50s or thereabouts, isn't it, that he's going to end up at, which is madness.
But I can see it.
We're on those, though, do those weeks ever, you know, they don't seem to come off that often when the whole world is on somebody.
Oh, they do sometimes. That's the point.
I'm going to stay away from it and let you guys have it. I'm too late to the party anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, I managed to jump on too late, but I'll take a 75 to 1 place. So my Scottish Open, I've got Cantlay at the top. I've then got Justin Rose. I've got Ludwig Åberg at 50 to 1. And I've got Alex Smalley at 75 to 1. But that what I'm talking about, Paul, driving distance and around the green, that does shout Lucas Herbert big star.
Yeah.
That's his game.
Yep. No, I can see, you know, kind of why I've gone down that route, but I can see why he's been a popular pick in general as well. And he's another one of those where there's just an absolute sea of blue next to his name.
Right. Yeah, that group there of Smalley, Lucas Herbert, Ryan Fox, Aaron Wright, Adrian Meronk, they're all being backed very, very well, and quite rightly. Yep. So it's a nice little pocket in the market there.
Indeed. Right, okay. The final two I've got, two longer prices. Matt Wallace, I've backed at 200 to 1. I mentioned him earlier, won the Corrales Championship in March. Been off the boil since, which for him is disappointing in Ryder Cup year because he will want to find a way to kind of force the issue for Luke Donald one way or the other. But then he went out and won the Open Championship qualifier last Tuesday at West Lancashire Golf Club. You know, and that combined with the fact that he shot a second round 64 at the Travelers Championship when missing the cut, suggests that he might have just found something. He might just have turned the corner in terms of his form. Second at Hillside back at the 2019 British Masters. Second at Fairmont as well, St Andrews in 2020. Should really have won that event at Fairmont St Andrews as well. So he's got some good coastal linksy form. He was fourth here after 54 holes on debut. So got a little bit of course form as well. I think Wallace could go well. 200 to 1. Again, another one who's been backed quite heavily. He opened at 300 to 1, but still worth a punt at that price. And the other one, couldn't resist it. Matthew Southgate, 300 to 1. I've talked about him at length. If there's a way to describe it further than at length, but I've described him or talked about him loads on this podcast in the past. He just loves this kind of terrain, doesn't he? He's playing some solid stuff this season as well. Three top 12s. He was fourth at the Soudal Open. 10th last week. Now, he talked about Sepp Straka being on 59 watch. Matthew Southgate was on 59 watch last week. He got all the way to the final hole. He needed a birdie the 18th to shoot 59. Tough hole, made bogey. But even so, anyone who's getting within a sniff of, you know, shooting 59 on a tour event is playing some good golf. And he's coming to a course that is, you know, going to suit him. It's one that is absolutely right up his alley. So he's another one who got through Open Championship qualifying as well last week. So he's playing next week, can play this event with a lot of freedom. There's no pressure on his shoulders. In fact, he's shorter in price to win the Open Championship next week than he is to win this week in Scotland, which is madness in my view. So taking Southgate. So just to summarise, Southgate, Wallace, Alex Noren, Lucas Herbert, Tyrrell Hatton, Ricky Fowler for me. These bombs you talked about, Barry, who are they?
Going to go with Joost Luiten.
Joost. Yes, he likes a bit of links as well.
Not the longest out there, but second and eighth in his last two outings. I went and messed around with him. I found about 125 to 112 places. I preferred the extra places there rather than the 175 at eights.
Mm-hmm.
Bit of a jump, but yeah, I feel like the having the extra four places is worthwhile. And the other one I'm looking at is Romain Langasque.
Yeah.
Who in his last five outings has had a 16th, 10th, and an 8th. 8th being the most recent. He was 3rd here 4 years ago. So take a little flyer on him. I think I'm going to go the Paul Williams route. I can get him at 250 to 1, 8 places. I might get greedy. I'll figure it out.
Very good. Yeah, playing some decent stuff as well, Langasque. So.
Yep. Do you reckon Lucas, our five-star podcast reviewer, is on Joost Luiten this week?
Oh, definitely. Don't tempt me into doing a Dutch accent.
We're big in Holland, apparently. We're the number one golf podcast in Holland. We're probably with one downloader, and that's Lucas. Should we talk about the Barbasol Championship?
Yeah, let's do it.
We'll talk about it for 10 minutes. One of my three tips might be actually flying on a jet to Scotland at the moment, which is very annoying. But there's been apps. Poor old Rob Bolton on Twitter. He's been working the midnight oil, trying to keep up to speed with how they're dividing up the Scottish Open and the Barbasol Championship this week in terms of field. Apparently, Troy Merritt, who is one of my tips, this came out overnight from Rob, could well be a sponsor's exemption into the Scottish Open. Now, at the moment, he's showing on everyone's books to still be playing the Barbasol. He's not showing on any books to be showing the Scottish Open, but that could, of course, change. But there's been a load of them, haven't there, Paul?
Yep.
MJ, Daffy, there's been a whole list of players that were apparently been asked to go to Scotland and must have turned around and said, no way, mate, I'm staying here. I'm staying in the States.
Yep.
So we'll see if Troy Merritt's in that category. I mean, for me, why would you fly to Scotland to then have to fly all the way back next week to play the Barracuda in California?
Mm.
Doesn't make a lot of sense, does it? But I suppose there's ways and means and...
No.
and favours to be brought in with a lot of this.
Mm.
The Barbasol alternate event, very poor field, an absolute birdie fest. They play at the Champions Course, Keen Trace in Kentucky. It's hot, it's humid, it's a par 72. It's got five par fives, the longest of which is only 570 yards. 7,328 yards in length, six holes with water in play. Quite a few of these holes where, you know, where you've got water that goes down one side of the fairway and around the green complex as well. It's got a little bit of a, yeah, that some players find that very, very intimidating. Others get on with that. It's in Kentucky, so we're looking at bent grass fairways. Kentucky bluegrass with fescue rough. There isn't a lot of it. 6,000 square feet on average, bent grass green, so very big. And because it's 29, 30 degrees Celsius most weeks, most years here, they water the greens beyond, you know. So every ball's just hitting the green and going, oh, thank you very much. Absolute birdie fest. It was the fourth easiest golf course on tour last year, the fifth easiest the year before. Bombs away, chaps. James Hahn holds the course record with a 60. That's minus 12. 12 under 60. That's mad.
That's good.
Kelly Craft's got a 61. Jim Herman, Troy Merrick, JT Poston, and Adam Svensson, Brandon Hagee all have 62s on this golf course. 25 under won it last year. Trey Mellanax. I know people were on him at 150 to 1. I had no idea how or why, but they were. Seamus Power was the favourite when he won here. He was 21 under par. Jim Herman, your friend, the Hermanator. I wouldn't be surprised if you're on him this week, Paul, because he was in the top 10 last week at halfway. He shot 26 under and Troy Merritt 23 under. So we are going birdie ballistic this week. Mullinax was 150, as I said. Power, 20 to 1 favourite. Herman, 500 to 1. Merritt, 55 to 1. Those are the four winners here at Keen Trace. There's thunder in the forecast and rain. I just think it's, you know, it's very similar to last year. You might find there's lots and lots of suspensions. And that course is getting regularly doused with water. So it really is. It's going to be a superb birdie fest. When I look at the strokes gain numbers quickly, off the tee 13th, this is for winners, just working back to Merritt, where they finished in the field, in the made cut field. 13th for off the tee, 8th for approach, 24th around the green, 3rd tee to green, 24th putting. So team no putt is in effect this week. Last week at the John Deere Classic, we said you needed to be very strong with the putting to win. Sepp Strucker won. He was fourth for strokes gained putting. Brendan Todd was third for putting. This is not that kind of tournament. It's all about excellent approach play. Straight and true off the tee. Just create those eagle and birdie chances. Now, I've got three. I've gone for Vincent Norman, the young Swede, who I've been very impressed with since he's graduated. He's at 1-1-3 on the FedEx Cup, so he's by no means guaranteed his card for next year. Bearing in mind that this is a one-off year, isn't it? They're actually extending the FedEx Cup beyond... Well, they're not. If you're in category 71 to 125, they're going to be playing to the end of the year to keep their card. And then the new season starts at the Century Tournament of Champions next year. Anyway, a lot of these guys are still playing for cards. It's as simple as that. I think Norman is extremely strong off the tee. 11th for driving distance, 33rd for off the tee, 9th for going for the green, and 10th for eagles per hole. I think Norman on an open course with wide fairways suits him down to the ground. I really do. He's also second in this field. When you look at the full season statistics on the PGA Tour website, he's second in this field for birdie average, only behind Akshay Bhatia. So he makes plenty of birdies. He's long. He's very aggressive. And actually, his form has picked up since. I mean, he finished ninth in the team event at New Orleans, but when we got to 18th at Mexico, that's another wide, and that New Orleans course, of course, wide open, loads of water. Mexico, plenty of water on that as well, wide open. He was 18th. Then he really got his teeth into it. Eighth at the Byron Nelson, 24th last time out of the Rocket Mortgage, where he finished, I think, with a 7-under 65. So I think Norman's got, he's got momentum. I'm on him. So 2 points each way. I've got 28-1, 7 places each way with Coral. Bet365 are doing an 8 places extended market this week. If you just click into the outrights, you'll see a table there, and 8 places each way is an option. I've gone for our old favourite. If you're talking about players that can hit it a long way, like Trey Mullinax, and are coming into a tiny bit of form, but not a lot, you're not getting 150-1 on this chap, but that's because this guy actually knows how to win. Cam Champ. I got him 40-1. I'm only going small. I've gone 3 players. Small stakes, effectively. 1.25 points each way. 40-1 I got on Cam Champ. No one's backing him, so that's still out there. That's with Bet365. 3-time winner on the PGA Tour. Played quite nicely in his final round last week. He shot a 5-under 66 at Deer Run. Yeah, and he just plays on courses that seem to link to a merit, to a Herman. So there's a bit of course correlation there. He hits it a country mile. And if he can keep a warm putter going, I could see Cam Champ going very well at 40-1. And if he's in the mix on Sunday, you actually know with Champ, he can actually scrag a victory. And his FedEx Cup ranking is 1-4-5. His win exemptions are ending at the end of this year. So if Champ doesn't get top 125, he's got problems in terms of maintaining his card. So I would have thought that's starting to gravitate in his mind, and he's actually having to focus on what he needs to be doing at the moment. So Champ at 40-1, Norman at 28-1, and then I finished with, who was actually, this was my favourite bet of the lot. It was Troy Merritt. I hope he does play Barbasol, I really do. I got him 40-1, 8 places each way with Boyle Sports. He opened at 60-1 with a couple of firms that were going 5 places each way. But I took the full 8 because it's that kind of event. You just want some. You want to kind of cover your week and get out of here, really. But Merritt, yeah, scorable. He's absolutely ripe for this. Plenty of birdies when he's on form. A 2-time winner on the PGA Tour. 4th and 2nd for strokes gained tee to green across his last 2 outings. That's pretty mad. And then all of a sudden, the putter starting to warm at Deer Run last week, over the weekend. It had been ice cold. All of a sudden, Troy's actually making some putts as well. So I hope he plays, but it looks like he might play the Scottish Open. That's Merritt. The other two that seem to be playing, Champ and Vincent Norman. Right, you two, anyone interested in a bet at the Barbasol?
Well, just to, I've backed Troy Merritt as well, but just to back you up on him, if you look at your statistics that you use for the event specific variables for the predictor model, Troy Merritt sits first par 72 scoring, first for soft course scoring, first for medium length course results, first for resort level scoring. So
he'll play the Scottish Open then, wouldn't he?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And miss the cut.
Yeah. Statistically, based on the type of course that we're playing, he fits like a glove. So yeah, as you say, he's probably in the air over the Atlantic at the moment, and that will scupper that. So,
well, you said to me people were tweeting him, and Rob Bolton basically said he didn't really know what was going on, and Troy wasn't responding to any email, so we don't know where he is. He could be midair, couldn't he, across the Atlantic?
So we'll see where he gets to. The ones I've backed, Lucas Glover, I've backed to 25-1. 4th at the Rocket Mortgage, we talked about that last week, 64-65 over the weekend. 6th last week at the John Deere Classic when you were on, and bogey at the last, otherwise he'd have finished a little bit higher than that. sixth and 12th for strokes gained approach. Last two outings, fifth and 15th for strokes gained putting. So his approach game's working, his putting game's working. He doesn't normally play this, so I think it's fairly clear that he wants to win a golf tournament, and he's in the right kind of shape to do just that right now, I think, Lucas Glover. I have backed Jim Herman, as you said, 125-1, 63 in the second round last week. That was just the spark of form that I wanted to see. 11th for strokes going off the tee last week as well for Jim Herman. You're never going to get a sparkling form line of Jim Herman when he comes in. You're never going to get a sparkling form line when he wins, but Jim Herman can win a golf tournament. And the other one I've backed, a bit more speculative, one of my favourite players, Alexander Levy, 200-1. And that's simply because I keep seeing his name pop up sporadically on DP World Tour leaderboards and suggest to me that something is percolating with him. He's an aggressive player. I think that style could and should suit this course this week. He was 11th after 54 holes at the British Masters, 6th after the first day last week, closed with a 67 as well. I wouldn't be surprised to see Alex Levy sneak into the each-way places at 200-1. So I've taken a little punt on him this week. But that's me, Levy, Glover, Herman, and a hopeful one on Troy Merritt. Barry?
Just put a bet on Glover. But other than that, I'm getting a lot of panic looking at the current form versus course form and just seeing MCs all over the place. Blindfolded dart at the board might be more beneficial than trying to break this down, at least in terms of how I do it. So,
they're total and utter feast or famine, these events. It's either someone sub 40-1 or someone just crazy like a Nico Echeverria at Puerto Rico. That tends to be how it works. None of us mentioned Taylor Pendrith, who's the favourite.
That's not fun backing the favourite, though, is it?
It's not fun. And actually, you look at Taylor Pendrith, he's clearly a very talented player, played in the President's Cup. You could argue he's probably the best player in the field. But just look on Wikipedia how often the guy wins. And you'll be scrolling and scrolling and scrolling and scrolling to his Canadian Tour victories way back in God knows when. Mm. So it doesn't fill you with enthusiasm. I think that's us, chaps. Thank you for your time this morning, gentlemen.
Yeah, best of luck, boys.
Good luck, lads.
I hope your bets go well. I hope listeners' bets go well and DraftKings teams. We are going to be recording our Open Championship research podcast this Friday. So listen out and look out for that. Clearly, Open Championship from Hoylake next week. Enjoy your golf betting. We'll see you again soon.
If you like betting on golf, but everyone that you back misses the cut, get some experts involved with all the stats and the tips and so much more. 'Cause it's the golf betting system, the golf.